Arizona may be about to copy a really bad idea from California. A Florida city fails in a suit against its FBO. And airline pilots invite controllers along for sim training. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, August 24th, 2010. The National Association of Flight Instructors is warning that something like California Assembly Bill 48, which mandated crippling new fees and reporting requirements for flight schools in California, may be coming to Arizona. The Arizona State Board for Private and Post-Secondary Education will meet Thursday in Phoenix, and ominous on the agenda is an item titled, quote, Question of Regulation of Certain Classifications of Airplane Pilot and Instructors under Part 61 of the CFR, unquote. The California bill would have required anyone offering flight instruction to pay a $5,000 fee, $3,500 for renewal every year, another $1,000 for any additional training locations, and a portion of income to the state. AOPA's legal staff determined the measure did not affect individuals instructing independently under Part 61, and more formal schools were urged to file waiver applications to stall the onset of enforcement. The state legislature seems to be headed toward a revision. The infamous Silver State Helicopters case produced litigation in both Phoenix and San Diego. It drew the attention of regulators and made the flight school industry look fly-by-night. NAFI Executive Director Jason Blair warns Arizonans, quote, As a state that has a significant number of flight training providers, we're concerned about the chilling effect those fees may have on those businesses. We're encouraging our members in that state to get involved in this issue so we don't have a repeat of the California situation, unquote. The northeast Florida town of Fernandina Beach, located on Amelia Island, got into a tiff in 2004 with McGill Aviation, which runs the FBO at the city-owned airport. While the dispute started with allegations McGill was using more land than authorized in its lease, a later eviction attempt and lawsuit was based on charges the FBO was violating FAA regs. The city lost that lawsuit, and in the process to figure out who pays whose lawyers, the Fernandina Beach News Leader reports that on August 9th, Circuit Judge Brian Davis ruled McGill did not owe the city any legal fees, but the city could owe the company as much as $1.2 million in legal costs. It also owes McGill $750,000 in damages, and McGill apparently gets to keep $400,000 it put in escrow during a period when the city refused to accept rent payments. A hearing this Thursday will determine the exact amount the city owes the company. It could be in the range of $2 million total. That would be $165 for every man, woman, and child living in the city. It's expected the loss will be covered, however, at least in part, by the city's insurance provider. The FAA's Partnership for Safety Symposium was held last week, and the Airline Pilots Association took advantage of the opportunity to offer an airline pilot's perspective on important issues including communications, information management, and controller training. Union President Captain John Prater noted the need for proper communications technique. Quote, Airline pilots learn the importance of adhering to standard procedures and phraseology in their communications, and the value of training and discipline early in their basic flight training. These principles remain essential to safety no matter how experienced an aviator becomes, unquote. ALPA Executive Air Safety Chairman Captain Rory Kay observed, quote, Pilots receive a huge amount of information when planning a flight, some of which is critical to its safe operation, while some information may not be especially relevant to the individual flight. Pilots need the information we receive to be prioritized so that we can quickly determine what is of greatest importance to the safety of our flight, unquote. He also joined other stakeholders in praising the FAA for reinstatement of opportunities for controllers to sit in on simulator sessions with airline pilots to see the operational environment firsthand. Up next on ANN, a beaver with four aboard is still missing in Alaska. A lost Super Cub pilot pressed on in deteriorating weather. And even million-dollar UAVs can get too slow on final. You're listening to Aero News.
This AeroCast segment is sponsored by 4Flight, makers of 4Flight Mobile HD, the elegantly designed iPad and iPhone app for pilots. Learn more about 4Flight's new touch-based flight planning capability. Build complex flight plans and bend routes around weather in just seconds using only your fingers. With HD NexRad, VFR and IFR charts, terminal procedures, a comprehensive AFD, and now touch planning. Visit us online at www.4flight.com. 4Flight. Intelligent apps for pilots.
The Waco YMF-5D is an open cockpit sport biplane that embodies the golden age of aviation in a new production aircraft. The evolution of the new D model Waco incorporates many new features and upgrades, delivering greater performance than ever before, but with more horsepower and lower aircraft weight. Your new Waco is completely customized to your exact specifications, including your choice of avionics. Own and live the dream yourself with the new Waco YMF-5D. Check out the dream at www.wacoclassic.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 24th. I'm Paul Plack. As of our deadline, a de Havilland Beaver with a pilot and three park rangers on board remains missing in southwest Alaska. The U.S. Coast Guard is assisting in the search for the Beaver, which departed Switchback Bay Saturday afternoon. The plane was headed for King Salmon, about 285 miles southwest of Anchorage. The Coast Guard reports the flight normally takes less than an hour. The rangers are National Park Service employees assigned to Katmai National Park. The New York Post reports another plane left on the same route about 15 minutes behind the missing one and arrived safely at King Salmon. That pilot said deteriorating weather forced him to descend to about 500 feet and follow a river to his destination. Katmai National Park Superintendent Ralph Moore said the pilot was very familiar with the area and may have landed and taken shelter in a remote cove to wait out the storm. Watch for further updates at aero-news.net. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on the very different fates of two Piper Super Cubs headed from Tanana to McGrath, Alaska on August 12th. The two planes were reportedly on a 10-day excursion under Part 91. This leg was a 162 nautical mile cross country. The pilot of the second plane reported the weather deteriorating in front of him, but says the lead plane continued straight ahead toward the Sunshine Mountains in an area of worsening weather. Once they passed the first mountain ridge, the weather became turbulent, dark, and raining, and both airplanes had to descend to remain clear of clouds. Around this time, the pilot of the lead airplane radioed, "Buddy, are you still with me?" The second pilot responded barely, then lost sight of the lead plane. He radioed to the lead pilot that he was out of here and turned around. The lead pilot did not respond. About 3 minutes after he made the 180, he says he heard a short burst of noise on the radio that sounded like an open mic. He says he repeatedly attempted to contact the lead pilot to no avail and eventually continued on to McGrath via a different route. The wreckage of the lead plane was located later that day on rising terrain at the end of a canyon. Neither the pilot nor his passenger survived. No pre-crash mechanical anomalies were found, but investigators say the plane had no shoulder belts, neither occupant had been wearing a lap belt, there was no flight plan filed, and the ELT had been turned off. A formal report on probable cause is likely a year away. An Air Combat Command Accident Investigation Board has issued a report on the cause of the crash of an MQ-1B Predator at Southern California Logistics Airport in April. The Predator was an Air National Guard asset from the 163rd Reconnaissance Wing at March Joint Air Reserve Base. The report says a student pilot failed to recognize the aircraft's speed was too low for the weather conditions and aircraft configuration and got too slow on final approach. The resulting stall proved unrecoverable for the student and his instructor, resulting in, to use a great new euphemism for crash, a hard landing that exceeded design limitations. The Predator and one inert Hellfire training missile it was carrying were a total loss, valued at about $3.7 million. But unlike the stall spin accidents we see about once a week in manned GA aircraft, no humans were injured in this one. Still ahead, Iran offers conflicting statements on the use of its new military UAV. The SpaceX Dragon is drop-tested off the California coast. And ping pong balls become an aerospace product. You're listening to Aero News.
Now, another moment of freedom from Cirrus Aircraft. Freedom through safety. Perhaps the ultimate freedom is confidence, assurance, and peace of mind. We design it into every personal aircraft we build. It's the security that comes with knowing you're flying the plane with a parachute. The breakthrough concept that launched the Cirrus phenomenon.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, August 24th. I'm Paul Platt. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad stood on a stage Sunday and pulled a sheet from what he claims is Iran's first long-range UAV, which he says will be used against aggressors in the Islamic Republic. The prototype aircraft is called the Qarar, and it's one of several new pieces of military hardware Iran has revealed in recent months. The UAV was rolled out the day after Iranian and Russian engineers began the fueling process at Iran's first nuclear power station. Reuters reports Ahmadinejad says Qarar could be used to make preemptive strikes against a perceived threat, but then turned around and said it would not be used in a first strike situation. Quote, Iran will never decide to attack anywhere, but our revolution cannot sit idle in the face of tyranny. We can't remain indifferent, unquote. Iranian state television says Qarar can carry four cruise missiles or a 500-pound bomb at 560 miles per hour with a range of 620 miles, and that it could be used for reconnaissance or as a missile testbed. Aircraft are drop-tested all the time, but not like this. An Ericsson air crane carried SpaceX's Dragon cargo module, which is also being developed to one day carry live crews, to 14,000 feet off the California coast on August 12th and dropped it. The company says the recovery system, which uses two drogue chutes, then three main chutes 116 feet in diameter each, worked as expected and set the capsule down in the Pacific, where it was recovered and brought back to shore by ship. This is the last in a series of tests to validate parachute deployment systems and recovery operations before the craft's first launch. SpaceX has a contract to begin delivering cargo to the International Space Station starting next year. The Dragon can land safely even if one of the three main chutes fails. Eventually, once the ability to aim for a precise splashdown point is proven, thrusters and deployable landing gear will be further developed to allow landings on land. As federal lawmakers fight the shift to the commercialization of space, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk observes, quote, We are proving every day that the future of American missions to space will rely on American-made commercial companies, unquote. And finally today, if you ask a bunch of NASA engineers accustomed to living in the federal procurement budget paradigm how to keep a returning space capsule afloat in the ocean, you'll probably need to budget tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. But if you ask college students used to playing beer pong, you might be inspired to do it for less. NASA is crediting the inspiration of a team of summer students at Langley Research Center in Virginia for the idea to fill a prototype of the Orion crew exploration vehicle with ping pong balls for an upcoming unmanned test in which it will return from 75 miles up with an unpressurized cabin, which would normally mean it would sink to the ocean floor. Student Carolyn Kirk recalled a Discovery Channel program about raising a ship from the ocean floor using 27,000 ping pong balls, and the engineers got approval to test the concept. The balls have since been tested for their buoyancy, heat resistance, and other properties, and it looks like it's a go. The Orion project would require about 150,000 balls, nominally priced about 50 cents each, but the students are hoping for a quantity discount. This is really cheap by NASA standards, even at full MSRP. And maybe it could be done free. I mean, come on, what ping pong ball manufacturer wouldn't love to be able to claim legitimate aerospace quality for his product? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, the Kestrel Turboprop, present and past. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.